like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant for a lot of people, and Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
Now then, we're going to talk some NBA. So the Philadelphia 76ers are back in the NBA playoff hunt this year. They're the number one seed in the East, which is sparking memories of 20 years ago when MVP Allen Iverson led them to the 0-1 NBA Finals, where ultimately they lost to the Lakers. Iverson, still an iconic figure all these years later, transcended sport, crossed into the mainstream, into pop culture. To discuss, we are going to our number one Philly fan, John Gonzalez of The Ringer. Hey, John.
Hey, Joe.
So we'll talk Philly 2001 in a few moments' time, but let's go back 20 years, because Allen Iverson is one of those names which even the most casual NBA fans know. He's got his own documentary on Netflix and several others. Besides, a character full of contradictions and quirks, and we should probably start with the fact he's an unbelievably talented player as well, because that can get sideline to touch. Let's just start with some of the good stuff, and you know, it can be disrespectful to go straight into the other stuff. So 14 seasons in the NBA, 11-time NBA All-Star. He was All-Star MVP and NBA MVP in that 0-1 season 20 years ago. He was, and I think he was in Kobe's year, he was the number one draft pick. He was the Rookie of the Year, 96-97. In 2008, for instance, ESPN said he was the fifth greatest shooting guard of all time. And at 6 foot, I think Michael Jordan said, thank God he was small, because otherwise this guy could have been the one. So tell us about Allen Iverson, the player, maybe to kick things off here, John.
Yeah, that was a great summation. He was fantastic. He was a few years older than I am. And you mentioned Kobe Bryant, who was a year younger than me. And we went to a neighboring school, grade school. So I, at that time when they were both coming up, I was sort of, I got a front row seat to some of the great basketball players of all time, and didn't really realize that they were going to become that. I mean, I think that everybody realized that Allen Iverson was a special talent, but for him to become what he became at the size, as you mentioned, barely 6 foot. I mean, I'm under 6 foot, and I think Allen Iverson is about my height, and certainly slim. So for him to do what he did as a scorer in the NBA for as long as he did it, and also take the punishment, Joe, that he took. I mean, time and time again, he would pop back up off the floor after getting knocked down. And let's not forget that now in today's NBA, most of that physicality that we saw in the late 90s and early aughts, it's frowned upon now. Back then, if you were going to the hole in a playoff game, you expected to take some significant contact, and Allen certainly did that, and he always popped right back up. So to see him in his formative years when he was in his prime was something special.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting that you add that perspective. So it is hard to know nationally how somebody compares. I mean, you know he's Philly good, and you know he's good, but you don't know he's going to be Allen Iverson.
Yeah, and similarly with Kobe. I mean, I got to see him in high school and didn't realize he would go on to become one of the great players of all time. But with Allen Iverson, I think like there was more of a flash with Kobe that needed some like early development before he really took off like a rocket. With Allen, he came into the league and there was so much hype around him. There was expectation, and he met that and exceeded it in a lot of different ways. But there were those flashes, Joe, early on where you thought, okay, maybe this could be somebody who's not just a number one pick and not just special, but potentially a Hall of Famer. I'm sure you and everybody who watches your show knows or remembers that play where he crossed over Jordan. For me, in his rookie year, that was the moment when I thought to myself, oh, wow, we could be onto something here.
So did you see him play in high school? A lot of games, a handful of games?
Iverson, I saw a couple of games. That because back then it was tape, you know, there wasn't YouTube or internet was limited. Yeah. So I saw a couple of games. I certainly saw all of his college games because, again, he was, I believe, a year or two older than me. So I was very familiar with his time at Georgetown. And he was special. He was special then. And there was a lot of anticipation about what he could be because he was so dynamic. He was so quick. I had never seen somebody. It's one thing to be quick without the ball, Joe, but to be able to move as quickly as he did with the ball, that I think is what put him above everybody else.
Okay. So it was his dynamism. It was his speed. That's what made him stand out.
That, and also, I mean, there's that ethos in Philadelphia where you like somebody who's sort of an underdog, right? Who's, he's undersized. He's gritty. He has that sort of attitude that Philadelphia likes, that mentality that it's us against the world. He always played to the fans. I think when you incorporate all of that into that package, he was the perfect player for Philadelphia. He would have been a star anywhere, but I think the Philadelphia really wanted somebody to call their own and say, hey, that's our guy. And he returned and reciprocated that love. And even to this day, Joe, when he goes back to Philadelphia, he's the biggest thing going.
Yeah, I was reading that. So in Philadelphia terms, this guy's God.
Yeah, I mean, so what was it? Right before the pandemic hit in 2020, I went back to Philadelphia to write a story about Allen Iverson. It had been 10 years since he had played in the NBA. And he was sort of just casting about. And his job, functionally, was to go to games in Philadelphia and be Allen Iverson. He spent the entire game going from suite to suite, shaking hands of fans, taking pictures, glad handing, saying hello to people, just being himself. And I can't tell you, like, there were kids who never saw him play, Joe, and yet they all know about Allen Iverson and they were dying to say hello to him and get a picture with him.
Okay, because you wrote in that piece in The Ringer that there's a deep and enduring attachment and affection between Iverson and the city that can be hard to fully explain or appreciate unless you're from here. So it's that kind of a bond. And presumably he's going around shaking all these fans' hands because, yes, he loves the fans, but he's making a ton of money on the side.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. The money is definitely a component of it, for sure. But I think with Allen as well, I mean, we all know about, you were mentioning some of the things that were less savory for Allen Iverson, and he had some money problems and some marital problems. And, you know, he has a deal with Reebok where he's supposed to get a certain chunk of money after he hits 50 in 2030. So the money definitely helps, for sure. But I think with Allen, the big thing is the adoration. I mean, he wants to be Allen Iverson and he wants to be loved as Allen Iverson. And the number one place for him to be those things is in Philadelphia, even to this day.
Mm. And so, like, this is potentially a silly question given all the awards he's won and the standards he set. Is he in any way regarded as an unfulfilled talent with all the extracurricular activities or, you know, a few clashes with coaches, which we'll come to? But, like, did this guy hit the heights he should have always hit?
Well, I mean, I think that there were moments that he'd like to have back, certainly. And then as with most athletes, professional athletes, there are always, you know, tarnishes or blemishes on their record, or even with just human beings in general. I mean, none of us are perfect, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that if we all were truly honest about our lives, we'd say, well, I wish I could have done that differently. And also on the court, right? I mean, he never won an NBA championship. However, I think all the time about that 2001 team that you had mentioned. If you look at that team, there were no other scorers on that team, I believe, who eclipsed more than 11 points per game. Allen Iverson had a lot of role players around him, but he put that entire team on his back. And they were good role players. I mean, there were guys who were great defenders. Aaron McKee was an excellent teammate and passer. Eric Snow, you know, was a fine NBA point guard for that time. And, of course, you had Dikembe Mutombo, who was a great rim protector. But none of them were transcendent talents like Allen Iverson. So I think when you really go back and look at that team, for him to even get them to the finals and win that first game against the Lakers, who were expected to dominate and sweep that was a significant thing.
Yeah. And even in the games then against the Lakers, which they subsequently lost, he was putting up big scores.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can ask Allen Iverson to do, and I think that he acquitted himself really well in that series. But if we're looking for things to knock Allen Iverson for, I mean, like, he wasn't a great defender. We all know about his issues with not playing when it wasn't actual game time, you know, what kind of teammate he was. I think he was a good teammate as a human being, but maybe always not the guy who made other guys considerably better. But he was, for whatever faults he had, a supreme competitor. And I keep going back to this. For him to do it at the size that he was and take the punishment that he did and to continually play, I mean, he was very rarely out. And he was always a guy who was going to show up for the game and compete to his utmost. I mean, there are people, we've all seen it in every sport, who maybe on certain nights, you know, they're not giving their best effort. I rarely saw that from Allen Iverson.
Okay, which maybe explains why he was so irritated when, and you can give us the context here, I'm not entirely sure of it. It's the clip that's more famous in some ways than the context. This is after the 2001 season where he's been phenomenal. I think then, you know, the following years are years of frustration. So his coach accused him or outed him for missing practice, and he goes to town here in this epic rant, which goes on for a very long time. We're not going to play the full thing, but I think a lot of basketball fans are very familiar with it. So here's Iverson reacting to the fact that he's been outed for missing a practice.
If I can't practice, I can't practice, man. I'm hurt, I'm hurt. But it's easy to talk about. It's easy to sum it up when you just talk about practice. We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. We're talking about practice. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice? We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. We ain't talking about the game. We're talking about practice, man. When you come in the arena and you see me play, don't you?
Absolutely.
You see me give everything I got, right?
Absolutely.
But we talking about practice right now.
But it's an issue that you're...
How the hell can I make my teammates better by practicing?
So he's got an ego.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely does. And I think, like, that's a rant that will live with him forever. For the rest of our days, we'll all talk about that, right? But contextually, I think that there are some important things there. First, and this is something that didn't come to light until years later, his friend had previously died right before that, right? So he was going through some things, I think personally, mentally, emotionally, that led to that moment. And led for him to, one, miss practice, and then two, sort of vent to the media that this was not as important as maybe everybody else was making it out to be. In addition to that, you heard him mention in there that, you know, practice is one thing, but for games, he showed up and gave his utmost effort every single time out. I think that was the essence of Allen Iverson, that there were things that mattered to him more than anything else, and that was playing actual games of basketball, and maybe practice wasn't always given his full and undivided attention. Although, again, I think contextually what happened with his friend really did impact him there. But then also, Joe, if we think about the time period and the way that teams used to practice relative to where they practice now, if we put Allen Iverson in today's era, this wouldn't be an issue at all. Joe, I can't tell you how many times I go to practice and players aren't practicing or practice is canceled completely because they're doing load management and they want to make sure the guys are fresh. Back then, in the early aughts, when Larry Brown was the coach, and Larry Brown is a phenomenal Hall of Fame coach, and all credit to him, but he practiced in a very old-school mentality way where he would have practice every day, and they'd be long.
Okay.
And that takes a lot of energy out of superstar athletes. So I think like that was all building to a head for a long time. And if we had flash-forwarded that moment, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Okay, fair enough. So 20 years ago, it's the anniversary of this 0-1 season where he's MVP and he picks Philadelphia up and carries them on his back. So if that's kind of the halfway point of his 10 years with the 76ers, 96-97 rookie of the year, gets to the NBA Finals 0-1. Post 0-1 to his finale 0-6, the next 5 years don't seem to go amazingly well for various reasons. Like, for instance, I was doing bits of reading. See, I'm not as familiar with all this, so this is kind of new to me in certain ways. Like Chris Ford, for instance, one of the interim head coaches, they seem to have so many clashes. Iverson suspended for missing practice. There's a theme there, I guess. Fined for failing to notify Ford that he wouldn't be attending a game because he was sick. He refused to play in another game because he felt, quote, insulted that Ford wanted Iverson to come off the bench as he was working his way back from injury. And so like that's kind of a messy situation. Do the years after 0-1, is that just it's still him having to carry the team and he's just not quite able to do it because, frankly, it's a damn hard thing to do? Is that a maybe blunt but fair summation of his 5 years post 0-1?
Yeah, no, I think that's completely fair. I think if we are looking at Allen Iverson's time in Philadelphia or even just his time in the NBA, the high watermark for sure was that 2001 season. Mm. From the moment that he entered the NBA up through that moment where they went to the NBA Finals and lost in 5 games to the Lakers, he was on the ascendant. And then, not to say that he necessarily descended immediately, but for sure there was at least a plateau. And then we saw him sort of ebb afterwards after he was traded. I think those moments where you were talking about the clashes with the coaches post Larry Brown, with Chris Ford, with the organization, where things started to go a little bit sour there, it was building to a point where clearly Allen as you mentioned, he has an ego, and rightly so. I mean, he wasn't just a transcendent basketball player. We have to remember the era that he was in. He was a transcendent figure in a pop culture sense. I mean, in terms of, like, if you had mentioned the most famous people in the Black community or in the pop culture community, music, sports, I mean, like, that whole meld where, you know, rappers want to be athletes, athletes want to be rappers. Allen Iverson was at the top of the list for everybody. Everybody wanted to get close to Allen Iverson. So he was a seminal figure in the 2000s, where if you could, you know, get Allen to show up at your event or be in your music video, or, you know, you're sitting courtside and you're hanging out with Allen, that gave you cultural cachet. So I think that that was component as well, where he goes, hey, I'm Allen Iverson, and you want me to come off the bench after an injury? Like, what sense does that make? And also, forgetting about just the ego, on those teams, he was still the best player until he left. I mean, Andre Iguodala had come in towards the end of Allen Iverson's tenure in Philadelphia, and Andre is an exceptional player and I think didn't get his due in Philadelphia. But he's still Allen Iverson. So there's a component for sure that I understand, although I think if you went back and asked Allen, he'd say that, yeah, I mean, maybe he'd like to do some things differently towards the end there too.
He had a very interesting life as well in so many ways. I mean, this could have all gone horribly wrong. He was born to a 15-year-old mother at the time. I read like a father figure of his arrested in front of him at the age of 13 for dealing drugs. And then at 17, before this amazing career takes off, he's arrested and sent to jail. And at a bowling alley, his group were there, supposedly quite loud, told to be quiet. All hell breaks loose. A woman has a chair smashed over her. Iverson goes to jail. And then, amazingly, video emerges. Allen Iverson left the bowling alley before this fight even started.
Yeah, and Joe, you and I have talked a lot on your show here about cultural issues in America, societal issues, racial issues. And I think that that was a flashpoint. And at the time, Allen was branded with this really broad brush, right? He must be a troublemaker. He was at a bowling alley. He got in a fight, or his friends got in a fight. He went to jail. He must be a bad person. Hmm. Well, John Thompson in Georgetown said, well, no, we know that we've had, and this was at a time when people weren't really talking about all these issues. I mean, we spent the last year in America having a conversation that was long, long overdue. And you and I were part of that conversation here, but it like wasn't really part of the firmament at the time. And I think John Thompson, who was somebody who had lived and experienced it and was the head coach of Georgetown at the time, said, no. There's often more to the story here than just one side about a group of young Black teenagers in a bowling alley who were told to be quiet. That sounds a little strange, right? That all of a sudden it was just one side who was acting up and like decided to get in a fight unprovoked. And so John Thompson was really the one who dug to the bottom of it, realized that Allen wasn't a bad guy, that he might have been in the wrong place at the wrong time, and maybe some things happened that shouldn't have, but that he was sort of railroaded in that incident. It took Allen a long time to get past that incident, not just himself, but also the way that people perceived him. And I think that it bothered him, and rightly so.
So you mentioned his place in culture at the time, I suppose, for want of a better word. And if anyone watched The Last Dance, I mean, one of the things which strikes you is Michael Jordan is always wearing these pristine suits, you know, very, very expensive tailored suits and beautiful ties and immaculately presented. And so Iverson has come into the league in 96, 97. So they're contemporaries. And you mentioned, you know, their clash on the court that time. So Iverson seems to draw attention because he goes the opposite way. He's wearing baggy clothes. He's wearing jewellery. He's getting tattoos. Like, I see he's been asked about his hair. I mean, Lord knows where this quote comes from, or the question that prompted this quote. But he says, I didn't get cornrows because of no thug shit. My whole thing with the cornrows was I would be on the road. Barbers in different cities would mess my hair up. So I figured, shit, if I get my hair cornrowed, I wouldn't have to worry about that. It's a long season. Then that turned out supposedly to be some thug thing. And I know he was upset as well when Hoop, an official NBA publication, they airbrushed his jewellery and his tattoos from its January 2000 cover of the Philadelphia 76ers. So you've got Jordan and the boys wearing their suits, and you've got Iverson in baggy clothes, jewellery, tattoos, airbrushed out of an official NBA publication, being asked about his haircut and its links, I guess, with gang culture. Talk to us about all of this. I mean, that makes him kind of very interesting figure.
I mean, all of the things that we're talking about right now, I mean, like, if any of that was done now, rightly, you know, there's a large conversation in America about cancel culture and things of that nature, which is complete and utter nonsense. But, like, if somebody had airbrushed Allen Iverson's tattoos or taken away his jewelry now, immediately there'd be a media storm saying, why would they do that? That's black culture erasure, and wrongly so, right? But at the time, all those things that we're talking about weren't as charged for whatever reason, but should have been. I mean, the word thug is hypercharged. Allen Iverson wasn't a thug. He's a professional basketball player and one of the most famous athletes on the planet. He wore his hairstyle in a way that people were wearing their hairstyles then. And even Kawhi Leonard now, and some people have gone back to cornrows. But at the time, jewelry and baggy clothes and sneakers, and that was part of pop culture and young culture, right? That's how people dress. That's how I dressed at times. And I think, like, he was a transcendent figure on that front as well. Fashion-wise, he was at the forefront of, this is the way that people are dressing who are young, and, like, you know, paying attention to fashion of the era. And that was a problem for David Stern too. David Stern implemented a fashion code because of Allen Iverson. When I wrote that piece about Allen, I went back and talked to a bunch of his contemporaries, Elton Brand among them, Elton Brand, who's now the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers. And he said that that rule was put in place because of Allen Iverson, and that black players across the league who respected and loved and followed Allen Iverson thought, wow, not only is he somebody who is setting trends, you know, for people who aren't in basketball, but he's changing rules in basketball because of who he is. That's how powerful he is, even though the rule was designed to thwart him in those efforts.
I suspect he didn't abide by that rule.
It wasn't his favorite. I mean, he used to say all the time, suits aren't my thing, right? Like, just because I dress the way that I want to dress, and he still dresses that way. Like, I saw him, 2 years ago when we hung out. And he dresses the way that he wants to dress, and he looks like Allen Iverson. And I think, you know, my dad used to say this to me, and it has a bunch of different applications, but I think that it's germane here. He said, because he had an interesting way of dressing as well, but he would say, you have to be your own man in this world. And if nothing else, Allen Iverson has always been his own man in this world. And sometimes that's been to his detriment, and I think that he'd tell you that. But more times than not, it's been very much to his credit, because for all of the people who wanted him to be something else, or to wear a suit, or not to have cornrows, or not to put on jewelry, or not to have his tattoos, he said, no, this is me, and you should either accept it or not.
Yeah. So I'm presuming the Jordan era was the last era of the suits. They're not all walking around in suits now, are they?
I lose track of it. It's also changed because of the pandemic, right? Previously, there was a rule where you had to have a jacket on the sideline if you weren't playing, and coaches had to be in suits. Now, post-pandemic, I think everybody's gone, let's just keep our athleisure on. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. You said, time you chatted with Iverson before the pandemic, I like the way you put it in the piece in The Ringer. You said, you know, he was busy and he was on Iverson time, which I think means he was pretty badly late. And it does seem from your piece like he has a no-show quality throughout his life. I mean, there's no guarantees if he's booked in to do something, he's going to show up. But you said we ended up having a couple of different Aaron Sorkin walk and talk kind of conversations. There was a lot of hustle and bustle, and there was some event on or some sponsorship thing. So, I mean, is he a good guy to chat to? Is there, like, the would he engage with you and show a certain kind of humility, or is he, I'm Allen Iverson, and I'll do it my way or no way kind of a vibe?
So the timing thing, it's part and parcel of interviewing Allen. I've been lucky enough, fortunate enough to be in his orbit for various publications or media outlets or TV stations over my career. And it always sort of goes the same way, where you give a general time and hopefully Allen shows up. Generally, he will be slightly late, or there are times when he doesn't show. However, when you do get to Allen, he's incredibly engaging. I mean, he's so gracious with his time. There are times when the connection doesn't end up happening, but once the connection ends up happening, he's always been phenomenal. And I can't thank him enough, one, for spending time with me for that piece, because we spent the entire game together. I mean, he had a zillion different obligations to do at the game, but I went with him for all of it. And then we sat in the box together and we talked, and, you know, the crowd was cheering him, and we took pictures for him. And then previously, even, you know, when I was still working and living in Philadelphia, when I had a TV show there, he had come on multiple times and given me, you know, as much time as I could use. Okay. So I think the whole thing with Allen is, once you get to him, he's fantastic. Sometimes getting to him depends on the day.
Yeah. So he's retired just over 10 years now. What's he doing with himself?
Always a good question. Depends on the day. He's been writing a book for some time. I think that he hopes to get that out soon. And, you know, he's still an ambassador for the 76ers. And there was times that, you know, in that piece where we talked about, did he want to get back into basketball? And I think that, like, if he could get a job where it was some sort of advisory capacity, he might be interested in that. But as always, his main function and his main day-to-day activity is being Allen Iverson.
Mm. Was he popular with his contemporaries, fellow players, teammates? What would they tend to say about Iverson?
You know, I think, like, by and large, almost everybody I talk to loves Allen. I mean, if you go around with him and you see not just his contemporaries, Joe, but guys who came after him, he remains a superstar. To see him walking around on the court, the game that I ended up covering, the Lakers were in town. I mean, LeBron James stopped to make sure that he paid homage and said hello to Allen Iverson. So I think pretty much to a man, people who have come into Allen's orbit really enjoy being in Allen's orbit, because there's a star quality there and something that you don't often see in everyday humans, right? I mean, I just recently did a story about Inside the NBA, which is the, you know, the Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaquille O'Neal show. And Dwayne Wade said to me that Shaq is a human, but not really a human like the rest of us, that he's a one of one of one. And that's kind of how I think about Allen Iverson.
Mm. The size thing is very interesting. So, I mean, there's not many sports where your size is such a prerequisite for success. So at just about 6 foot, about, you know, a short 6 foot, as you maybe alluded to. And I mentioned that Michael Jordan quote that, you know, if Iverson had size, then he really could have been the one. How much of a handicap was that? Like 3, 4, 5, 6 inches more? Would it have completely changed what he could have done? I know he did plenty, but talk to us a bit more about the size aspect.
Couldn't have hurt if he was slightly bigger. I mean, maybe even not the height, but so much the weight. I mean, he was listed at 6 foot. I would say he was slightly under. He was listed at, you know, 170 something pounds. If he was 160 soaking wet, I'd be surprised. I had a conversation with Brett Brown, the former Sixers coach, about him one day, because Brett Brown had had the opportunity back when he was Greg Popovich's assistant coach to be at All-Star games and to go with Pop to coach these things. And Allen was there in the locker room with a lot of these famous basketball players from the early aughts. Tim Duncan was in the locker room, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant. You know, it's possible that Jordan was there towards the end of his career. But the point here was that Brett Brown walked into the locker room and he said, you look around and you see all these men, right? Like these men with these giant bodies and muscles rippling, and like they're about to go out there and be at the height of their athletic prowess. And then you see Allen Iverson, and he's just skin and bones. And he's competing with these guys, and not just competing with them, beating them in many ways, taking them, you know, off the dribble, or popping up and stopping on a dime to shoot a jumper, or dunking over them and just like racing up and down the floor. And for him to be able to do that when he wasn't as, I don't want to say physically gifted, because he clearly wasn't hyper physically gifted, but he wasn't as broad or big as the rest of some of his contemporaries.
So again, I guess the point we're talking about this is because it's 20 years on from that 0-1 season, and he's MVP and he picks up Philadelphia, as you've said, and carries them all the way to the finals where they lose out to the Lakers. And the 20-year anniversary coincides with the 76ers massively in the hunt this season. So talk to us about modern day Philadelphia and how this is going to play out over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, the current Sixers, last night's game against the Hawks did not go nearly as well as I think a lot of people anticipated. They had the game ready to go, and they were in the lead at the half, and then all of a sudden everything crumbled, and the second half was disastrous. They certainly, you know, we're talking about Allen Iverson as well. They could have used half of an Allen Iverson in the second half because they didn't have any scoring, and Joel Embiid is clearly hurt. So I still believe that the Sixers are the better team than the Hawks, but it's the kind of series and the kind of city where all of a sudden people start to get nervous.
Mm. Their last NBA championship win, is it the 80s?
Their last championship win was 83, yeah.
83, okay.
So it's been a while, yeah, almost 30 years. Wait, 10, 20, yeah, 30 years. I had to do the math there.
Yeah, I'm going to that horrible stage where you start comparing it to our age. And
oh, wait, is it 40 years now? It's 40 years.
Subtracting.
I got it wrong.
It'll
it's
be
40.
38 years, I guess, is it?
Yeah, I use words for a living. I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah, that's fair enough. 40, give or take. So Philadelphia's pretty hungry, I would think. And was 0-1 20 years ago? Had they been to the NBA Finals between 83 and 0-1?
No.
Okay.
No, it was 83-01, and now the drought continues. So,
okay.
The Sixers are long overdue.
Okay, interesting. Well, let's see how it goes. John Gonzalez of The Ringer, always great having you on. People can check out your interview still. It's still online with Allen Iverson if they want to check it out. It's a really nice read. John, thanks a mil.
Joe, thanks for having me.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.